Sportsnet 650.
Thanks for joining us. Well, I mean, it's tough for us to debate on the West Coast as to what the mood is like in Ottawa, but you tell me, is there getting ready for awards night? Is there a little bit of a buzz going on in that city as the 105th Grey Cup approaches?
Yeah, 105th, and kind of tying on some late 150th celebrations because this country hasn't celebrated itself enough in the nation's capital. But no, it's fun. You've got the Atlantic Schooners here who don't have a team, but with recent news, maybe they'll have a team in a couple years. Maybe they'll be hosting a Grey Cup one day in the Maritimes. But, you know, it's Thursday of Grey Cup week, and that's pretty much when everyone is in town. The hardcores come in Monday and Tuesday when the actual Grey Cup and the teams get here, but the city is buzzing. You're seeing a lot of different jerseys, a lot of different colors, and that's a special thing about the Grey Cup for me. You go to Super Bowls, you see a lot of suits, a lot of corporate people, and you see a lot of the people for the two teams who bought tickets off of the secondary market to get there at the last second. Grey Cup, you see everybody. You see a real party. And if you weren't a CFL fan, you wouldn't necessarily know who's in the game because all nine teams, and really 10 with that unofficial team in the Atlantic Schooners, are represented well. So I'm having a blast so far.
So you're based in Toronto, and, you know, the city hasn't been totally supportive of the Argos in terms of attending games and interest. Of those fans wearing jerseys in town, how many of those are Argos fans, and has that level and interest changed this week in terms of support in Toronto?
Well, saying the city hasn't totally supported is putting it very nicely.
Yes, very polite.
On any given day, you may see
you may
see more Marlies jerseys walking around downtown Toronto than Argos jerseys. But there are a lot of people in double blue here in Ottawa. It's geographically it's pretty close. Other than Montreal, it's the closest, and you're looking at a short train ride, an hour flight, or get in the car for 5 hours. So there are some Argos fans, you know, probably saying to themselves, why couldn't you figure this out a year ago when it was in our backyard in BMO Field? But it'll be interesting to see how many are actually in stadium on Sunday who had enough confidence to buy tickets early because the game did sell out pretty quickly. But if you're an Argos fan, you're just happy that you're at this point you're not talking about who your coach is going to be, which you were, you know, a year ago after a 5-13 last place season. You're talking about, man, if we keep things together, we could be making a run at multiple Grey Cups.
So is a win this weekend going to change that? Will the interest go up even if it's for the short term? Let's say the long-term play. Would a win change anything in Toronto, or is it kind of status quo every single year?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what the metric is, what your definition of change is. I think any news is good news for the Argos. And, you know, if they're planning a parade for early next week and they're on, you know, City TV and Sportsnet and all the other stations that are owned by other telecom companies that I can't think of right now, that would be a win for them because they're fighting for market share in that market. So to elongate this conversation is a plus. However, is it a fix-all? Is it the magic elixir? No. That was the thought going into the Centennial Grey Cup in Toronto, in the Rogers Center, you know, with the Argos winning, with the most outstanding, you know, Canadian being a guy from Toronto and Andre Drury, with the most outstanding defensive player in the game being a guy from Toronto and Ricky Foley. You couldn't have written a better script. And we saw what happened, right? It was a year later, it was status quo. Either way, win or lose, they're going to be better off next year because they've got better ownership, they've got better investment, and they're investing for the long term, and they have a league office who, on their agenda, at the top of the list is help Toronto help itself. We need to get that situation right. So they're going to be better no matter what. I think they're pushing, you know, a boulder uphill, and a win on Sunday and some good vibes in the city would help incrementally, but they've still got a long road to toe. And it has to be remembered what happened with the 100th Grey Cup, because people who thought football in the city of Toronto, Canadian football anyways, was fixed were sadly mistaken.
Well, and Donovan Bennett is joining us now from Sportsnet. Donovan, the fact is, I mean, this conversation, we could have had it 20 years ago, trying to get Toronto going and trying to get BC going. It will always be the challenge for Randy Ambrosi as he sides as commissioner over his first Grey Cup. Other than the two big cities and the talking points, do you get the sense that this league is moving the right way and is healthy? And I'm excited because if there's someone who may actually finally more action than talk and get a team to the Maritimes where I think it would be so embraced and really show this is a Canadian league, you feel the league is in a healthy spot right now with the exception of those two big cities?
Yeah, I would put Montreal in that conversation as well. You know, we take it for granted because they were so good for so long and they sold out for so long, and both have kind of fallen off in the last couple of years. I also don't think that it's a coincidence. The three markets we're talking about, BC's and playing out of Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal, are also markets who have MLS teams. And this is, you're right, this is a conversation we would have had 20 years ago, but we wouldn't have had the same competition with the MLS, a similar size league, playing similar stadiums, attracting similar fan base at a similar price point. So again, that's a little bit of market share gone there, both in as far as your customers, but also your advertising dollars. And 20 years ago, we weren't dealing with this crazy thing the way it is now called the internet and called data on your phone. And the fact that, you know, you could get, you know, whether it's NFL Sunday Ticket or NBA League Pass, and you can be a fan of it, literally any sport, anywhere, the tribal feeling that you have for your local team isn't the same. It is in Saskatchewan because that's the team for the entire province, and that's all that those people have. It's part of their identity. But if you're a 17-year-old in Vancouver or a 13-year-old in Toronto, Canadian football growing up isn't part of your identity. And I think the league, working with a partnership with Twitter, doing lots of things on social with Snapchat, having the Bring It In campaign to get youngsters into the game early, I think they're addressing those issues. But again, it's something that they're not going to see the dividends of for 5, 10, 15 years when those 17 and 13-year-olds are now paying customers. I look at it similar to the Raptors and to a similar extent the Grizzlies when they started. They really tried, and the Raptors did it with a purple dinosaur, but they tried to capture the young kids hoping that they would grow up, they'd have some brand loyalty, and they'd be the paying customer. I think the league is doing a lot of hard work now that they're probably not going to see much dividends in the next 5-10 years, but the hope is generations from now, they've got, you know, a new fan base, because as full as it was relatively at BMO Field, there was still a lot of people with white and gray hair, and that client base, you'll take that money now, but that's a sadly a dying client base, and you need to find unique visitors to your stadiums.
It's pretty fitting that this year's Grey Cup is in Ottawa, a franchise that's actually figured it out. They've kind of tapped into that university crowd, and is that the way of the future for the CFL in terms of tapping into the experience and maybe not so much the game?
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, I talked about the pride that Riders fans have, right? Like, it's part of their tradition. You're going to get in the pickup truck. You're going to tailgate, whether you're coming from the south or the north. You're going to meet, you know, in Regina, and you're going to have a good time. In Ottawa, bringing football back with local ownership who understand the marketplace, and not just redeveloping a franchise or a stadium, redeveloping that entire area with condo developments, with shops and restaurants. There's a real pride in the nation's capital about what's going on in the city, and the Red Blacks are kind of the best signal for people to express that. You know, the Senators, as good as they've been at times throughout in Kanata, you're taking a long Uber or a long bus to get there. And, you know, we've all seen the shots of empty bars during the playoffs with people disinterested. The Red Blacks have tapped into that young fan base that you talked about that want to be social, be out, have something to congregate around. And now they have their own identity. Everyone's wearing plaid. You know, everyone's got the lumberjack theme. It's part of the city's identity, and it's kind of cool to witness up close. And so whether or not, you know, Toronto or BC can find out what that unique thing is for them to sell to that young fan base, we'll see. But Ottawa has done a great job. And one thing that their ownership did that was smart is they didn't think that, you know, they're necessarily going to reinvent the wheel, but they didn't also think they knew all the answers. They talked to other franchises. What's working for you? What are some of your best practices? How can we do what you're doing well and apply it to our marketplace, which is different? And 3 years in, or 4 years in now, they've got a Grey Cup. They had one after 3 years. They won one after 3 years, and quickly they went from not having a franchise to being a model franchise. And when you talk to people around a 10th team in the Maritimes, the model that it's based off of is what happened in Ottawa.
Ricky Ray will be the underdog on Sunday, but I know according to your article that you wrote on Sportsnet.ca, you think he wins tonight as far as being announced as the most outstanding player in this league. What's the difference for you thinking that he beats up Mike Riley?
It's tough. I mean, they're both great players. They both had great years. Both teams had great years. I'm just thinking because people who vote are coaches and media, and the media outweigh the coaches. And my only rationale is us media, we're kind of predictable, and we love storylines. We love narratives. We love a hook. And Riley is just a guy who's been really good and really clutch for a while now, and he's on a team that was really good. But Ray has a narrative. At this time last year, people thought he might be a quarterback coach or an offensive assistant or out of the league or a backup quarterback. People weren't sure if he was going to start. People were aghast when Mark Trestman said he for sure is going to be the starter when he was named and that he wasn't going to give Drew Willey a look. Drew Willey next year might be out of the league. So the rags to riches story is a little bit overdone, but the fact that Ricky Ray not only played virtually the entire year, missed one game due to injury, but played so well and led a pretty potent offense. I think, you know, us media hacks, we'll give it to Ricky Ray for the sentiment, if anything else.
Sportsnet 650.